Okay, everybody say thank you all for calling in and thank you all for being here. We're going to do the second part in the series discussing the role of Esther and in Megillas Esther and the Limud in general from what she has done. Okay, and I'd like to start off with a continuation from what we discussed last week about what Esther Amalka did and how she did it. Now, last week we mentioned that Rabbi Akiva woke up his Talmidim, who were sleeping, we spoke about that, and told them the story of Esther having this incredible energy despite the fact that she lived through what she lived through. Right? That's what we did last week. So today I'd like to discuss something which is it's a sensitive topic, but I think it's an incredible topic that has to be mentioned. Now, Esther had this incredible source of spiritual energy that allowed her to do what she did despite the situation that she found herself in. That's what happened with Esther. So now I'd like to ask you a question. Most of us have learned, correctly so, even though there's a machlokes, most of us have learned correctly so that Mordechai was married to Esther. Now, that is one of seven couples in the history of the world who the husband was a Navi and the wife was a Navi. Okay. Now, it happens to be that Chazal say, when they mention the most beautiful women that ever lived, and why Chazal had to mention that is a fascinating question, but they do. And they say that one of the four most beautiful women, this is also a machlokes, one of the four most beautiful women in the world that ever lived was Esther. So Mordechai is married to Esther, who is an incredible tzaddikus because she attained the level of nevuah, of which there were 48 men and 7 women in history who attained that level of nevuah, who we know of because they are written down. There were 1.2 million nevi'im who are not mentioned in Tanakh, and out of those 1.2 million nevi'im, the Medrash says 600,000 were men and 600,000 were women. But out of the nevi'im that are mentioned in the Navi, there are 55, 48 are men, 7 are women. Now, so we have this unusual couple of Mordechai and Esther. And we have this unusual statement that Esther was one of the four most beautiful women that ever lived. Now, we have an issue. The Megillah, unlike any other Sefer in Tanakh, is continuously comparing Jews and non-Jews. And the two leading men, or maybe two out of the three leading men in the story of the Megillah, is Mordechai on the one hand, and Achashverosh and Haman on the other hand. So let's take Achashverosh. And the Megillah makes a very big deal about this. This is not something which, pardon the pun, is hidden in the Megillah. It's something which is rather explicit. And not only is it explicit, but it takes up a lot of space in the Megillah, to the exclusion of something which I'm about to say in a minute that does not take up as much space in the Megillah. We all know that Achashverosh, in the midst of a party, kills his wife Vashti. Now, just by fact, you should know that nowhere in the Megillah does it state that he killed her. It's an interesting fact that most people are not aware of. It never says anywhere that that Achashverosh killed Vashti. But almost all Mefarshim do hold like that. There are some who say, in fact, she was never killed. She was banished. She was never killed. Now, that being the case, Achashverosh's wife is dead. What prompted that to happen?
Disobedience.
So, what prompted it was a discussion. This discussion is not mentioned in the Megillah. This discussion is mentioned in the Gemara. That the men, and they had a separate party for the men and a separate party for the women. The men had a party, and the men got into their cups. And Chazal spend a number of lines in the Gemara discussing something which is rather sensitive, and it's really it's a horrible discussion. When they got drunk, they started comparing the women of their land. Who is more beautiful? Who is more beautiful? And Achashverosh, to top everybody off, said that my wife is the most beautiful. And the description of his wife was Kli Shani Mishtamish Boy, the vessel that I use. That's what he described his wife. Which led to the incident of Vashti being invited, and we know how Vashti was supposed to come, and Vashti didn't come, and all the things that we all learned about and we all know about. But there's an amazing thing. How did Achashverosh become the Melech? Achashverosh became the Melech?
Through her.
Exactly. Achashverosh became the Melech through her. And as a result of becoming the Melech through her, she was the blue blood. She came from Nebuchadnezzar. She came from kings. She came from royalty. He married her. And so to speak, that was his way to the throne. Vashti was also a beautiful woman. Now, Achashverosh discovers the next morning that Vashti is dead. Again, without going into the Midrashim, just keeping it as far as what the Psukim say. Not that there's anything wrong with going into the Midrashim. But the Psukim, the Pshutei Shel Mikra, Achashverosh, where's Vashti? Now, going with the opinion that he in fact killed Vashti, which again, the majority of Mefarshim say that she was killed. So it says like this. Achar Ador Mayor, after the party, and after she was killed, and after they sent out the letters, Achar Ador Mayor, Kishay Chamas HaMelech Achashverosh, when his fury calmed down, Zohar Vashti. He remembered Vashti. The Eitz Asher Asasa, he remembered what she did, the Eitz Asher Nigzala, and he remembered what he decreed to do. Now this pasuk is emotionless. There's no emotion in this pasuk. It says, after he calmed down, which means, and she was dead, he remembered Vashti, remembered what she did, and remembered what he decreed about her. Now I ask you a question. If you were writing Rashi, and you would read the word, Zachar es Vashti, he remembered Vashti, she was his wife, he remembered her. I ask you a question.
When he became sober?
After he became sober, correct.
Right,
either the next day, it doesn't say when in the Megillah exactly this occurred, but after he became sober and his anger calmed down, he remembered Vashti. He remembered what she did, he remembered the edict, Pashas meaning the edict to kill her. Okay, now he remembered Vashti. What did he remember about Vashti? How do you know that? Rashi says it. I ask you, what would you say? What do you think? What would you say?
I would think, oh boy, now I'm without the blue blood. Now what?
Okay.
Now I'm like a pretender.
That's a good thing to say. Now I'm without my entree into the throne. Yeah. Good, because the blue blood's not here. Very nice. Can I ask you something? Was he married to her?
Yes.
Did they have any relationship?
There he
is. Did they have any relationship?
Yeah.
What?
Well, really good one.
How do you know? What is Rashi doing for us? Rashi is telling us, Zachar es Vashti. He remembered Vashti. Now Rashi, every letter, every word, every subtlety of Rashi is beyond our comprehension. So Rashi says, this is what Rashi chose to say, Zachar es Vashti, es Yofya v'netzav. He remembered her beauty and he became depressed. Did he remember the fact that she was his wife and she got him entree to the throne? No. Maybe they had a relationship. Maybe he even liked her. Maybe they had some discussions. Maybe they did some things together. Maybe he missed her. No. Zachar is Vashti, it's Yofya v'netzav. Now, the Megillah is describing the most powerful person in the world. And the most powerful person in the world's marriage was Zohar es Vashti es Yofya v'netzav, and nothing else. That's what it says. He got depressed because of her beauty. Not because of her intellect, not because of her kindness, not because of her midos, not because of the fact that she, again, got him into the throne. Garnished. garnished. He remembered her beauty, v'netzach. That's a relationship. That's the first couple. That's the most powerful man in the world. Married to the blue blood who comes to the most powerful people in the world. That's a marriage. Then, what does he want to do? He needs a wife. He needs a wife. What's the criteria to get a wife? Tayvais Mara. That's the only thing, that's your only criteria? Tayvais Mara. And then what does he do? Vayavkeir HaMelech Pekidim. He appoints the officers. B'chol Medinas Malchusai. And they should find the beautiful women there. And Rashi says, Vayavkeir HaMelech Pekidim in Pasuk Beis Gimel. The Pisha called Pukit to Pukit because everybody who was a leader in their communities, they knew who the beautiful women were. So now, the Megillah is trying to create for us a scenario here. And there are many, 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 many levels of what of understanding of what's going on. But here we have this level of understanding in which that which is stated explicitly in Megillah is that the only thing that Achashverosh felt bad about, according to Rashi, was that he lost her beauty, which is mavur, meaning which is understandable, which is almost explicit in the psukim, because the only thing you look for was beauty. Okay. Now, that's one. There's another Rashi. If you have a Megillah, you don't have the Rashi's. I'll read to you the pasuk. It's not a long pasuk. Pasuk says like this: After Esther revealed who she was. She revealed who she was. So she told the Achashverosh, her melech. Excuse me. She told the melech who she was. Told the melech who she was. What happened? She says, Ami v'akashosi, I'm a Jew. V'yemer ha-melech ha-shverish. The melech ha-shverish said, V'yem el-yester. The word v'yem is repeated twice. V'yemer ha-melech ha-shverish, v'yem el-yester ha-malch. So Rashi immediately quotes Chazal and says, why did it say v'yem twice? Why did it say v'yem twice? So it says, Kol makom shenema v'yem el-yemer, wherever it says v'yem twice, shnei pomim eino el-lumedrish. It's coming to teach us of. What? U'medrash also says, b'tchila, in the beginning, he spoke to her through a messenger. Now that she revealed that she's a Jewish woman who comes from Shoal. Okay? Do you understand what just happened? Achashverosh is married to Esther for 5 years. 7 years. And he has never spoken once to his wife. Never talked to her once. Never said a word to her. Directly. He only talked to her through a shliach. He never spoke to her directly. Why? Because she wasn't a blue blood. It didn't, so to speak, pass. It wasn't proper for him to speak to her. He never spoke to her. Now, can you explain to me what kind of marriage that is?
Was it the same with Vashti?
No, because Vashti was a blue blood. Not only was she a blue blood, she was the blue blood. He wasn't the blue blood. But Esther he did not speak to, not because she was Jewish. He didn't speak to Esther. You understand the relationship they had? He didn't talk to her. It's a nice sunset. Through a shliach. What a beautiful day. This snow. Whatever. Somebody was born, somebody died, somebody this, somebody that, somebody got married. Garnished. Nothing. Only through a shliach. He would never talk to his wife directly.
How do we know that?
Because it says, Vayomer, Vayomer twice.
Oh.
It says, Vayomer, Vayomer twice.
Can I ask you, how long did the whole story of Megillah from beginning to end?
12 years. It's an unbelievable concept. It's just an unbelievable concept. So what is this? This is a marriage? No, it's not a marriage. The way we understand marriage is not a marriage. Yes?
Was the Yavish born already?
No, not yet. Now, There's no relationship whatsoever. It's like it's not shaykh. Not shaykh to understand. Okay. Now again, the Megillah is making a comparison between Jews and non-Jews. Do you know why the Megillah is making this comparison? This is the first recorded sefer we have, really, in which there's so much interaction between Jews and non-Jews. The only interaction there was between Jews and non-Jews in all of Tanakh was sporadic, and most of the time it was fighting in wars, or isolated incidents, but never in mass, because the Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael. Now the Jews are living in Bavel. There's a whole society going on. It's close to 70 years they're there, and we have this incredible interaction where Mordechai is a member of the governmental bodies, and now we have this entire episode of Esther's in the palace, and Esther's in the palace because of a beauty contest, and she's in. I'm not going into the whole story now. I'm just mentioning Esther's in the palace because of a beauty contest, which was the only criteria to find a new wife after he killed his wife in a drunken stupor because he requested that his wife come because he wanted to show off her beauty. That's the storyline here. That's the storyline. Now, let's continue. Mordechai is married to Esther. We have every right to assume they had an incredible marriage, full of shalom bayis. Gemara says, Ishvi Shazachu Shechina Benayim. We have every right to assume the Shechina was living in their home. If Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach could say in the famous story to his Talmud on the way home, the reason why he's fixing his clothing before he walks in the door, coming from yeshiva, is because in his home the Shechina resides because he and his wife have shalom bayis. So Mordechai and Esther have shalom bayis. Right? And they had the Shechina. And he was a Navi. And she was a Navi. Okay, now, Esther's taken away. Esther's taken away. She's in the palace of a goy. And Mordechai keeps on saying to her, don't say a word. Don't say a word. Don't say where you come from. Don't say a thing. And she abides. Then she finally says something. Now, in order to say that thing, something else took place, which was an unbelievable, unbelievable act, which is not stressed that much. It's stressed when you learn it in Gemara, but it's not stressed that much because it's also not that comfortable to talk about, but we have to talk about this. Esther, Rachmana Litzlan, is taken to be the wife of a goy, who's interested in one thing, as we said, in one thing only. That's it, finished. He never had a discussion with Esther. How can you have a discussion with anybody if you have to have a shliach in between? Pass the eggs, what do you do? Pass the salt, or you need a shliach, whatever. Now, Esther's taken away. Mordechai is wearing sackcloth. Esther sends him a message. It says to Mordechai, sends to Mordechai, take off the sackcloth and come to the palace. What's going on? What's going on? He doesn't come. He doesn't want to come. But the schalchel hamalka, she fell apart, for lack of a better term. She melted away. And the Gemara says she lost control of this part of her body, she lost control of that part of her body. And for the first time I saw the Medrash says that she miscarried. Now the pashtus is, according to the Gemara, if she miscarried, that means she miscarried a child that she was pregnant with from Mordechai. Okay. What they would have done had she given birth, nobody can say. But here we have a woman who, her husband is outside, crying, screaming, wearing sackcloth, ashes on his head. He won't come into the castle, despite the fact she sends a message to come. She gets all nervous and she miscarries. Okay? Now, she then finally sends the message, and Mordechai sends back the message and tells her she must go to the king. She must go to the king. She doesn't go to the king, there will be no future Jewish people going to be killed. So she sends back a message. Her message is like this. Let me wait. Let me wait. 2 days, 3 days. The king hasn't called me in a while. He's definitely going to call me. Mordechai says, no, you can't wait. Now, in this room, in the Novi Shia, which takes place on Tuesday night, we spoke about this in great detail once. We're not going to go into the detail now. But Mordechai said to Esther, you must go now, you cannot wait. Finished. What's the difference? Here's the difference. If Ahasuerus calls for her to come, and the result is that they are together, she's still permissible to her husband. If Ahasuerus calls to her to come, if she goes to Ahasuerus, then she and Mordechai have to get divorced. So she's telling Mordechai, please, let me come in 2 days. Many meanings in that statement. Let me come in 2 days. If I go in 2 days, meaning when he calls me, I'll go. And when he calls me to go, then I'll explain and I'll plead for the sake of the Jewish people. Mordechai says, no, you got to go today. You can't wait. You can't wait. You cannot wait. Now, you know how great Esther was? Esther sent a message back to Mordechai. I'm asking him to go. I'm going to listen to you. And I want to fast for 3 days. Including Leil Seder. And all the Jewish people did not eat matzah that night. All the Klal Yisrael did eat matzah. And Mordechai consented to her. She was a great woman. And now, they get divorced. So here's a couple, lost a child, and got divorced. Why? Why did they get divorced? Because Mordechai insisted that she go to him. Why? Because he wanted to save the Jewish people. Here is the comparison. Here we have Ahasuerus, Rachmanu Litzlan, who's interested in marriage for one reason and one reason only, as we just said. That's the only thing he wants. Mordechai is interested in marriage for all the reasons the Torah says to have marriage, the Shechinah, Isha, all the brachas, everything that happens in a marriage. And besides for the fact he's married to the most beautiful woman in the world. And Lamaisa, if he would wait just a few more days, it's very possible he'll be able to save his marriage. No. I once called my Rebbe, one of my Rebbeim, Rav Nosson Vachfog, and I told him, as a matter of fact, even wrote down when I called him, Mitzoy Shabbos in the winter in Tovshin Memches, which is 1988. I said, Rebbe, I would like to say that perhaps this is what the Megillah is telling us, but Africa. That to save the Jewish people, Mordechai and Esther made a decision. It was a debate back and forth. And they made a decision to sacrifice their marriage for the sake of the Jewish people. They sacrificed their marriage for the sake of the Jewish people. Can anybody tell me anybody else who sacrificed their marriage for the sake of the Jewish people? Anybody have any ideas? Yes?
Rachel.
Excellent. Another one?
Sorry.
No. I want to give you three examples. One example of a person who sacrificed their marriage for the sake of the Jewish people was Moshe Rabbeinu. He was told by Kodesh Baruch Hu to divorce your wife. The only person in history to do that, he did. That's one. Sake of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu had a marriage. Moshe Rabbeinu had two sons. Moshe Rabbeinu divorced his wife. One of the sons. Kodesh Baruch Hu told him to. Maybe for a different year at a different time, why that was something that Moshe Rabbeinu had to do. He was the only person ever to do it. Moshe Rabbeinu did it. Another case.
When they're still in the time?
No. The pashas that took place after Har Sinai.
Didn't Moshe's mother and father?
Moshe's mother and father got divorced. That was, so to speak, for the sake of Klal Yisrael. That's because the Maisa, they couldn't have children anymore. Until Miriam convinced her father they should get remarried, because even if they can't have boys, they can have girls. You know, and the Mela, she saved Klal Yisrael. That's a shmooze for a different time, that women have always been involved making the right decisions, etc. But there's another issue going on, a serious issue, really a serious issue, that Mordechai and Esther made this decision to give up their marriage. They gave up their marriage. It's not shayach. You know who else gave up their marriage? Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Kodesh Baruch. They had somebody else gave up their marriage. An unbelievable couple. Unbelievable couple. You know what a couple is? Rabbi Akiva. How long did Rabbi Akiva and his wife separated for?
24 years.
Huh? 24 years. 24 years they were separated. Why in the world did Rabbi Akiva leave his wife for 24 years? And more than that, we all know the story. He came home after 12 years, his wife was put up, so to speak, and she ended up saying that if he stays away for another 12 years, it's also okay with me, and he turned around and didn't come back, and the famous kasha is, why do you stay for Shabbos? It's a very serious kasha.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very serious kasha. Mm-hmm. Why do you stay for Shabbos? And the answer that's often given, and sometimes it's given without enough explanation, Lanias Daiti, the answer that's often given is 1 times 24 is not the same as 2 times 12. When you're learning Torah and you're mafsik, it's not the same. But that teretz has to be understood in the following light. It's not the same, that's true. But lemaisa, you're supposed to be married. And to be married, you're supposed to be home. So what's the answer? Of course the Rebbe Akiva should have gone home for Shabbos. But not when Klal Yisrael's future was at stake. Rebbe Akiva was developing the leaders for the next door. And they were in the time of the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. Do you know there's a family called the Sternbachs? You ever hear of the Sternbachs? It's a very famous going in Eretz Yisrael called Rav Moshe Sternbach. He wrote many, many svarim. There was a couple who during the Holocaust, they were in Switzerland, the Sternbachs. They were involved in saving countless Yidden from the Nazis. Okay, here's the scenario. It's Shabbos morning. They're living in Switzerland. And it's the bar mitzvah of their son. And they get news that there are 7 or 8 or 9, I don't remember, or 10 Jews in the police station are going to be deported back to Germany. You know what they did? They said to their son, I'm sorry, and they left the bar mitzvah. They weren't there for the bar mitzvah. They left their son's bar mitzvah. They could have sent other people, perhaps. They could have made maybe wait. They had to save the Jewish people. Missed their son's bar mitzvah. Rabbi Akiva and his wife were separated for 24 years. Mordechai and Esther got divorced to save Klal Yisrael. Mordechai and Esther got divorced to save Klal Yisrael. And as you said last week, the all lived happily ever after. It doesn't really, you know, sound too good. Last week we spoke about the fact that that's what Rabbi Akiva, who went through the same thing, told the Talmidim, who was thinking about how in the world can we ever make it in this matzav. And he said there was a great woman who made it. Her name was Sarah. And she gave the koyach for Esther, who was another great woman who made it. And they will both give us the koyach that will make it. That will make it. Well, you mentioned somebody else before. And that perhaps was the greatest sacrifice ever. Ever. And that was that Rachel Imenu sacrificed her own future and her own life. She had no idea whatsoever that she would marry Yaakov Avinu. If she allowed her sister to marry. Because the halacha is that two sisters can't marry. And the Meisen, Yaakovina was keeping the Torah, Chutzlar, it's a whole tum. And the Mashgiach used to tell us all the time that the greatest sacrifice by any human being in the history of the world was Rachel's sacrifice to Leah. It was to build the Jewish people. She sacrificed her marriage. Potentially. Somebody else. There was a couple. The first couple. Avram Avinu and Sarah Imenu. Avram Avinu went through the greatest act of two individuals of the Akedah. Avram Avinu came home after the Akedah. Now, I'll be dramatic again. I want to be dramatic every once in a while. Here, I'm being dramatic. You ready? Going to be dramatic. Avraham Avinu came home after the Akedah. He burst through the door to tell his wife that he had just performed the Akedah to help build the future of the Jewish nation. He came home and found her dead. Why had she died? She had died because of the Akedah. Because the Sultan gave her a heart attack. And the Sultan told her, your son was killed by your husband. Or almost killed, whatever the words are in Rashi. So Avraham Avinu burst through the doors. The first time I ever spoke here, before I became Rav, on my Prabhu Shabbos, was about this word. That the Satan tried to get Avraham Avinu to have charata on the Akedah. He should come home and find his wife dead. Avraham Avinu lived to be 180, 175 years old. Sarah Imenu lived to be 127. They couldn't have been together for several more decades. He lost the ability to grow with Sarah Imenu. Esther Amalka had a miscarriage and comes to the palace and gets a message from her husband, give up our marriage. And she did. And she then ended up having a child, as we said last week, from Achashverosh. She ended up seeing not the entire, but many of the Jewish people leave Bavel and go to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, which Pashta she never saw.
I'm surprised that they didn't get divorced before she left, like before she went to the palace, knowing that she was going to.
That's the Gemara's question.
Like why did they wait?
Because when a woman, because the Gemara, without getting into all the details, but the Gemara says Fakert. She would come home at night to be back together with Mordechai. They kept their marriage going. Adarabah, they kept their marriage going. And the thought could have been that maybe this will end and she'll be able to come back home. They didn't know what was going to be. They didn't know what was going to be. They did not want to get divorced yet. They did not want to get divorced. Now, the issue of getting divorced is they got divorced because once she lived with Achashverosh one time willingly, then she became usher to her husband. Now you're asking an interesting question, I'm telling you, that maybe if they would have gotten divorced, that even if she would have gotten willingly, then she would not have been also to her husband. A lot of complications here. A lot of serious complications.
But then again, she went in pregnant.
Well, that's also true. Yes, all good questions. But the Ikka focus is that we are making a comparison between two Lahavdil, Elif Alfei Avdolahs, two leaders, mm-hmm. One being Mordechai, who gave up everything for the Jewish people, and one being Achashverosh, who gave up nothing from his vanity, from his lust, from his taiva, nothing. That's only one. And that's what the Megillah is doing. Yes?
The mindset was 3 days later that she went to him, so in theory, he could have called.
Could have been, that's true, but he didn't. But he didn't.
Right.
He didn't. He didn't. Had he done that, history maybe would have been different. He didn't.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. He didn't. Now, Avram and Sarah, Rachel and Yaakov. Moshe Rabbeinu, Mordechai, Rabbi Akiva. Said the Mashgiach that he had a Kabbalah, he heard a word from Yisrael Salanter, that a person has to be willing to give up anything and everything to build Klal Yisrael. That's a very, very challenging statement. Very challenging statement. To build Klal Yisrael, want to give up money? Want to give up koiches? Want to give up your marriage? Want to give up your marriage? Want to give up your marriage? Not shaykh. It's mamish not shaykh. Give your marriage. Unbelievable concept. Unbelievable concept. Now, let's talk about one more thing. Mordechai was involved this entire time in trying to work on saving Klal Yisrael. He had his wife was in the palace. He was trying to encourage her every day. He was crying. And he was dealing with Haman. And then he stayed in the government afterwards. And then what happened? He got demoted from spot number 3 to spot number 5 in the leadership of the Torah of Klal Yisrael. He got demoted. He got demoted in the leadership of Klal Yisrael. It's an absolute pella. He got demoted. Why did he get demoted? Because he didn't learn Torah as much as his colleagues. Why was he learning Torah as much as his colleagues? Because he was involved in saving Klal Yisrael. So he gave up what somebody could say are the two most precious commodities that a person has, the ability of Liman HaTorah to build his family. He gave them both up for Klal Yisrael. It's not shaykh. It's not shaykh. And I say again, we're trying to talk about Esther Malka. Who gave up more? Who can imagine? But at the end of the day, she was a prisoner in the palace. That's what happened to her at the end of the day. She stayed a prisoner in the palace. And last week we said that the Akiva used her as the paradigm of a person who still had the ability, right? She still had the ability. Not shaykh. She still had the ability. Had the ability to go right there. It's really unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. So let's conclude. We have a story that starts off with a person who has no attachment to his wife, except Zocher as Vashti, as Yofi of the Netzav, Zehu. And when he wants a new wife, nothing except for Yofi. Nothing. And then we have a tzaddik, whose name is Mordechai, who's married to a tzaddikus, whose name is Esther, who has an incredible marriage, and gives it up for the sake of Chal Yisrael. Not he. They give it up for the sake of Chal Yisrael. So, if you want to learn about the Megillah, you want to learn about Purim, it's an unbelievable thing to consider. So we have a Megillah. It's not called Megillah's Mordechai. It's called Megillah's Esther. It's called Megillah's Esther. It's not called Megillah's Mordechai. I don't know if the reason isn't because she gave up more than he did. Perhaps. I don't know. I don't know if I saw anybody answer why it's called Megillah's Esther, not Megillah's Mordechai. Or Megillah's Mordechai the Esther. I'm projecting or positing that perhaps that's the reason. The reason is because she, in fact, ended up staying in the palace. She, in fact, ended up staying with a guy. She, in fact, ended up with a child from the guy. And this is a husband who didn't talk to her for years. Didn't talk to her for years. It's not shaykh. It's just absolutely not shaykh. I'd like to conclude. This concept of promiscuity goes through the Doris. Mitzrayim, Shtufei Zimra, place of promiscuity. Unbelievable. Dor HaMabul was destroyed. Promiscuity. Unbelievable. Parshas Vayishlach mentions all the descendants of Esau. Mamzerim, Mamzerim, Mamzerim. This one lived with this one lived with that one. Klal Yisrael, there was not one act between a Jewish man and a Mitzri woman, or a Jewish woman and a Mitzri man, except for one act the entire time. Entire time. Nothing. No interaction in that sense, in that regard. It's unbelievable. Chazal say it's because Yosef HaTzadik controlled himself, and Sari Menu. And they put up a bridge and a shield of protection. But I'd like to end. Why in the world, we asked last week, did it have to be with such an unbelievable story that Esther has to be taken to this incredible story? What is this? And maybe it's to teach us from Doris that we can have a woman who gives up her marriage, is in the palace of a goy, and remains a tzaddikus. And the Sultan perhaps tried, this is conjecture, the Sultan perhaps tried, I'm going to get the greatest woman and I'm going to get her. And I'm going to be able to teach everybody in Klal Yisrael, don't worry so much about this kedusha. Don't worry so much about it. You see what she did? It ended up bakert. Everybody knew the story. She remained a tzaddikus. She wrote the Megillah with Ruach HaKodesh because she remained a tzaddikus. So is Esther HaMalka somebody we should... What's there to say? What's there to say? Esther HaMalka. It's incredible. Incredible. Yes?
Okay, Abraham took Hagar.
Abraham took Hagar.
So the Shvatim had the you know, Bilha, you know, the...
Yaakov took Bilha and Zilpah.
Yaakov, right. So in other words, they, you know, they
so
had...
So the answer to that is, again you're asking, it's your third good question of the night here. Again you're asking about what was going on with those marriages, and the answer is there is something called the Pilegesh. It was a marriage. It was a lower case marriage, but it was a marriage. It was done by Kedusha or Bitaro. This was not something had any drop of promiscuity in it, any drop of anything below the highest level of Kedusha and Tara.
But they weren't Jewish.
Oh, that's a very good child. Whether Hogar was Megayer, was that with Bill and Zilpa, whether they were Megayer, that is before Matan Torah, was Avram really Jewish? Now you're asking your child if a forest had been filled from all the books that have been written about that child. But it's not a comparison. They were engaged in marriage. Two types of marriage. One is called an Isha, one's called a Pilegesh. Big, big tumbles about this. You're asking, you know, I wouldn't say half a Shas, but, you know, a good percentage of Shas over here. That's what, you know, there's big tumbles. You're into big tumble city over here. Big, big tumbles. Big tumbles.
And also, how long was Mordechai and Esther married before this all happened?
That we don't know. That's a very interesting question. We don't have any recording of children. I only have this medrash that I found this year that says that she was in fact pregnant and she miscarried. It doesn't say anywhere that Mordechai and Esther had any children. The Pasha says Esther was...
Right, but that doesn't mean anything anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like someone could be married for years before.
Yes.
So we
don't know. We don't know. No, I don't know. It's interesting, isn't it? That all the, you know, that we always say that the Sforim and Tanakh are not history Sforim. They only teach us the relevant facts that we have to know.
We have so much information about something. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
I would think that's a...
Yeah, it's your bomb kashas. Okay, I'm thanking everybody who called in. I'm thanking everybody who came. We should all be zeicha only to Hatzlacha Rabba Ad Ma'od. Mm-hmm.